Thank you. Well, just want to encourage you guys again to let your guards down. This is about being ministered to today. There are prayer partners in the back that as you guys leave these, if as a couple or as an individual you guys want prayer, they're back there, and we encourage you to take advantage of it. It's my pleasure to introduce our first speaker today, Tom Schrader, who is on the leadership team at Redemption Church. He was the founding pastor of East Valley Bible Church that went through this merger and became Redemption Church. Here's the simple way I would introduce Tom. Tom is my father-in-law, and so I have the opportunity to tell people often about him. And the easiest way I could say it is he's my father-in-law. For a long time, he's been my boss and my pastor. Now he's a coworker with me. It's saying all of that, this will say it all. He's also one of my best friends in the whole world and the greatest mentor I've ever had. So you guys will have a pleasure in hearing from him. Tom Schrader.
I hope some of that's true. I told Tyler, I hope some of that's true. Well, that's really good. It's good to be with you this morning. We have a big monitor with a time. It's 9. This is what always happens to me, is everybody that I follow is bigger than me. So I'm kind of peeking over this pulpit. It's weird. I love it. This says 9:38. My hard stop time is 10:15, so let me get right to what I want to talk about. The hardest thing in a moment like this is to try to figure out just what you want to say. So let me tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to try to teach you a Bible lesson on marriage or on ministry. You already got all that figured out, and you could teach me, and I know that. I'm not even going to talk specifically just about a lot of the things that related to that. So if you want that, you can get Keller's book or you can get Driscoll's book. You can do whatever you want to do. Here's what I am going to do. I'm just going to give you some practical stuff based on my experience in terms of marriage. My wife Susan passed away late last year. And Susan and I were married 32 years, so I can speak from that. And then from ministry. So I've been at this deal for about 25 years. God saved me in 1980, and so I've been doing this since then. Susan and I used to talk a lot about marriage, and we would talk about just the uniqueness of every marriage. But I was listening to a tape about 4.5 years ago. I did an interview with Susan, and I was just asking her different things, and then we did a Q&A. And so one of the questions was, what do you and Tom have in common? What do you do together? What do you and Tom enjoy? And her answer was this: we have nothing in common. We don't have any hobbies together. She said, really, here's what we do have in common. We file a joint income tax. We live in the same house. We have 2 kids. And we both love Tom. That was her answer. Yeah, she was like that. So here's what I did. I sat down and made some notes, just stuff. And then I talked to our leadership team. I said, what would you want to hear if you were in a moment like this? And then I talked to some of the other pastoral team. And then I think it was yesterday, I was talking to my daughter, Haley. So again, this sounds incestuous. I apologize for that. But Haley's married to Tyler. Haley's my daughter. And I told, hey, I'm gonna be speaking at this thing. And she said, she happens to be here. She said, oh, I know I'm going to go to that. And I said, oh, wow. Well, what would you say if you were me? And she said, I don't know. And then she sent me an email. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 points. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take Haley's email and teach it to you. From a unique perspective of, she was on the inside of this, so she had about 25 years or whatever it was of watching ministry and marriage. And then from her unique perspective now as a pastor's wife. Now, a lot of what she listed are things that I had on my outline, but I don't know, for whatever reason, it just felt like it had more credibility coming from Haley. So I'm gonna do that. I'll just read you her points, and then I'll comment on them. And so we'll take about 5-6 minutes on these 7 points. And they're just practical stuff, and you may at the end of this say, there wasn't one thing I didn't know. He didn't say one thing I didn't know. So then that's okay. I'm fine with that. Then I would just ask, why aren't you doing it? That would be the other question. But so if you already know it, then you're perfect, then you ought to leave right now or come up here, one of the two. Number one, Haley said, do not use doing God's work as an excuse to neglect your family or marriage. They are your work and your ministry. Do them and then go home. So here's what I try to tell our staff. And I find this extraordinarily freeing. Christ died for the church. You don't have to. So this job that you have is kind of an interesting job. Now, I watch this group of pastors. So I'm with the senior pastors a lot, and then we were last week with the pastors of some large churches, and then gatherings like this. And it strikes me that by and large, most of you have a very inflated view of yourselves and the role you play. I was at a church planting conference where the speaker was repeating something I think Spurgeon said, and I'm sure he heard it from Paul, okay? But it was, if you can do anything other than plant a church, go do it. And that's one of those things. I just think that's stupid. There's 1,000 things I could do. If you have any level of talent, there's 1,000 things you could do. And I listen to the church planters. How many of you are church planters? Okay. Not many of you, and you're all in the back, and you all came late. That's interesting. There's something about these church planters, like, this is the toughest thing in the world. This is so hard. This work is, nobody understands me. Really? And I find those discussions to be kind of not productive. I get the difficulty of the work. But I'm afraid we've taken it, and we've taken this, you know, you listen to some of these guys and handling the Word of God and all the stuff that goes with it, which I'm down for that. I really agree with that. That's really important. But you understand that by definition, most of us are average, or the word doesn't mean anything. So I doubt you're in the top 10% of whatever it is you do. Okay, I'm not. Okay, and you are extraordinarily replaceable. There's not one of us in here who, if we were, when East Valley Bible Church started, there was this discussion, and it's true of any church plant, probably, or any new adventure. What happens if Tom gets hit by a bus? Okay. Now, I survived all of those bus threats, and I'm wondering if it wasn't a prayer request to some extent from people. But the reality is, and we're in that situation, I'm older, and what happens, it doesn't matter. When I'm gone, somebody else will be there. When you're gone, somebody else will be there. So here's what I was like. Work hard, work smart, give it your all, and then go home. Watch TV, play with your kids, eat, hang out, turn off the stupid phone. Well, all of a sudden, this access that you have, and I get the good and the bad of it. I'm with a guy the other day, and his wife texts him that there's one of the sprinkler heads is broken in the yard. Okay? Well, you're on a as-need-to-know basis on stuff like that. And then she calls us, say, what are we going to do? If they didn't have that phone, here's what she'd have done. She would have turned off the water and called the sprinkler guy. She screwed his day up, my day up, her day up. All of a sudden, this technology, so you go home, and now they're texting, and they're coming back and forth. And I don't mean about fun stuff. I mean about work, and what about this? And there's no shutoff to this. And I think Haley is incredibly insightful when she said, just because it's God's work isn't an excuse for you to take it home. And to understand the difference between sacred and secular. And to understand there's all these guys in their church that think in their mind to do really spiritual stuff, they need to be getting a full-time job and check from somebody that's in a church, something like you. Rather than to go, wait a minute, the guy that's administrating an organization at Intel is doing just as much spiritual work as the guy that's the executive pastor at Redemption Church. And for you to understand what you do is really important. I don't want to minimize that. I hope that didn't sound like that. I just want to place it in its proper perspective. And all of a sudden, this burden of God's work can become this excuse to bring all these things into your life that crowd out the things that are really important. And so you need to guard your heart. You need to have things that are in a proper perspective. If you're in a position where you're the management team or the leadership team, I'm talking to a guy the other day, and he said, we continually work 60 to 65 hours a week. Okay, I wouldn't want to do that. I want to work 40 or 45 or whatever's hard, whatever's fair. But Christ died for the church. Why are you working like that? Now, I understand the danger of this. Because the balance, especially among young guys, because our basic experience in working with young guys is you don't know how to work. You tend to be lazy. And you tend to, like, at 5 o'clock, oh, I really got to go now. It's not good. I need to get home. We're going to eat at 6. Okay? There's work to do. Do it. But do you see the balance in that? To come back and go, listen, here's that proper perspective. Here's the second thing that Haley wrote. Use the flexibility of being a pastor for your benefit. Now she reflects back on when she was in school. You were always at our game shows, etc. That was purposeful. It didn't just happen. Use it to plan a date with your spouse. So one of the things about our job, by and large, often, is you can control your own schedule. And you have to be creative in that. And if you're in the process, so some of you, the ministry you're in, you've got night meetings, and they're just, okay, you block those things out, and then the rest of the time, you're using that flexibility to figure out how you can get and minister to your family in a creative way. So I will look out, and I'll see Tyler out we have a commons in the back of church, and then there's this big kind of yard back there. You know, however many square feet of grass. And I will look out periodically and see Tyler out there throwing pitches to the boys. And if you talk to him and you talk to Haley, they'll go, well, this is just a really busy week, and I know I'm not going to be able to get home, so she brought the boys over here, so we carved out 10, 15, 20 minutes so that we can be together. This has to be purposeful in the way that you work, in the way that you live. And the way that you communicate to the kids, the great advantage that you have. As I said, God saved me in 1980, and it was about 1987, maybe, that I started teaching full-time in a non-church ministry. And Sarah, my other daughter, and Haley and I were walking through Fiesta Mall. And I could take you right to it, because it's up where Cinnabon is. I always arrive at the mall and you scout those out first because you want to know where Cinnabon is. So right there's the Cinnabon. And we're walking along, and then there's this little trinket store next to it. And Haley said, I'd like to have one of those. Sarah said to Haley, now they had to be at the time like 7 and 8, 9 and 10. Sarah said to Haley, you know we can't afford that now. And I had to sit him down. I could take you to the bench where it was. There's a bench right there. And I said, girls, I want to explain to you about this ministry thing. Okay? We didn't sacrifice anything to do this. Now, apparently what I had communicated to them along the way, didn't intend to, is we're going to have to go without some stuff now. We used to be over here. Now we're in here. Money's less. There's disadvantage, all this stuff. And apparently I had communicated to them, didn't intend to, that now there were sacrifices to be made so that Haley has to hear this from Sarah. And I sat down and I said, listen, here's what I want you to understand. God's provided this is an extraordinary opportunity to work. And within the context here of the church, we have certain things we can do, certain things we can't do, but God's been so good to us. And one of the things that God's given us in the midst of all of this is some level of freedom, so we're going to use it. I'm going to talk about kids in a minute, but one of the things you got to be careful are those messages you're sending to your kids. That was a scary moment for me. Because clearly I was didn't sit down, but clearly I was communicating to the kids, listen, this whole ministry thing is going to slow us down. It's going to inhibit you. It's going to cost you a bunch. And that's simply not true. And one of the advantages, by and large, for many of you, is to take the time to get control of your schedule so that you can be with your spouse. Every time. Almost, and to me, it's kind of cool. I got to tell you, when I read it, it was kind of cool to read Haley say, you were always at our games and always at our shows. And every time they presented a paper, I was there. And you would go to these things in the middle of the day. I'd be the only dad there. And it was because God gave me a certain level of flexibility in my schedule, and I was disciplined enough to take a look at it and say, okay, what are the advantages I have in my schedule? What's the things that are hard? So you got to be able to sit down and be able to go, honey, I can't do this. I can't do this. We've got some time there. How do we maximize it? And when the kids are young, you can do extraordinary things through the day with them. With your spouse, you have great freedom. Sneak home for a half hour or hour. Come into the office, meet me for coffee. It's so important, I think, for us to understand that this flexibility that by and large we have in our schedule. And by the way, if you don't, if you don't, then I would say you ought to stop and take an inventory and say, what are the things that are going to allow me? Because we've got time demands. We have certain things. Like Sunday's not a good day. Sunday's a busy day. Saturday night's a tough night. You've got nights through the week where you have those meetings. What is that flexibility that God's given us? And I come back to that first thing. Why the tension to talk about how difficult the job is when indeed you have a job that most people would love to have? I made some notes on kids, by the way, and let me give them to you really quickly. We understood very quickly that our kids were not ours. They were God's, and we were to steward them. And so that was our process. Here was our philosophy of raising kids, to make them independent of us and dependent upon God. So there are a couple little things. I used to, when the girls were small, and Susan taught me a lot in this. When the girls were small, I would say, we got to get them chores and things to do. And she said, why would you do that? So here you go. I'm going to tell you how we raised our kids, three or four things, and I'm not advocating any of them to you. Okay, I'm not saying doing any of them. I'm just saying this is what we did. They didn't have any chores. We didn't give them an allowance. Here's my view on allowance. I feel kind of strongly about it. I think allowance is kind of stupid. To pay them for chores they do that's their part of the role in the family is silly. That's like paying Susan to be a mom or me to be a dad. To me. That's their job. That's what you do. That's your contribution. Here you go. That's like what you contribute to society. We're going to teach them at every turn you get paid for that. We didn't make them get jobs. And part of that was, by and large, the job gave you a little bit of money, but to teach them responsibility. They were already responsible. And what I found is now you got a job, the job interferes with just us as families. We didn't have any curfews. They never had a time there to be home. So like they'd say, well, what time do you want me home? I'd say, what are you going to do? Well, there's a football game and then the boys shower and then we're going to go to a movie. And I'd say, okay, 1:30. Next night they'd say, what time do you want me home? And I'd say, what are you going to do? And they'd say, we're not going to do anything. I'd say, I'm thinking like 9. Okay. Well, why? Anything we're going to do before 9, we could do after 9. So what? Okay, 8. Okay. So yeah, but my whole part, and then the overarching thing just about parenting, these are things you already know. These are things you probably teach your church. Is we never tried to be their friends. I never wanted to be Haley's friend. I wanted to be her dad. And what I would tell them when they're young is, I love your mom more than I love you. You know, I love you, but you just kind of parachuted in here and then you're going to blow out of here. And I'm going to love your mom more because I don't want to be, because you're going to leave, right? Are you going to plan to stay? Like Robert E. Lee's daughters took care of him until he died. Do you want to do that? No. Okay. Then you got to understand, I love you, but not more than your mom. Because I don't want to get here 25 years into it and then the kids are gone and go, who are you? Where have you been? So in the whole idea of family, marriage, flexibility, those are just things I'd throw at you. Like I said at the beginning, random thoughts. Number two, speak of your wife. This is Haley again. Number three, speak of your kids, wife, and family well in and out of your sermons. Even when they're not there, they will hear, here's what your dad said today. What you say to them matters. I was listening to a talk the other day from a pastor, a local pastor. And he made an offhand, and I don't know about your flinch. I'm going to assume you're like me, that somehow it feels if they laugh, they're engaged. So you'll do something for a laugh. And then there's just certain things that you can do, and I get in trouble in this, like politically. I know there's certain political things I can say, and it gets a laugh. And I'm going, well, okay, to what expense? And this guy just made a comment about his wife. It was a comment that I'm sure he didn't mean to be hurtful, but it was a derogatory comment, and I thought, hey, pal, I would never say that. You can tease about certain things, but you gotta be really careful when you're speaking, when you're leading, when you use your family as illustrations and stories, that you're not painting them in a light that's less than complimentary. I have a friend who I've known probably for 25 years, and for 20 of them, we would have breakfast at least once a week for 20 of those years. And he said to me one day, and I never thought about this, he said, I never heard you, never have I heard you. And we've had a lot of, you know what conversations like that are like, right? He said, I've never heard you say one derogatory thing about Susan. At Susan's memorial service, her friend Susan Miller got up and said, Susan never said one derogatory thing about me. Now, let me be clear. There were things she could say. There were things I could say, too. But here you go. In any relationship, and especially in marriage, the commodity you trade on is trust. And everybody's watching. And this is the reality of this. Your job is a very public job. I remember I came home one day, and my daughter Sarah had cut out a cartoon. I don't know where she saw it. And it was a lady standing on the back porch, and she was opening the screen door, and out the dog was going. And the caption was, remember, you're the pastor's dog. So I got that everybody watches. I mean, I got that they all have a view. I've got that they all have an opinion. But you need to know, they take what you say maybe more seriously than you do, interestingly enough. And when you talk about kids and family and like transparency, so I'll get that a lot. One of the things that they'll say, one of the things I enjoy about your teaching is it's transparent. Not really. I'm showing you like that much. Here's the fourth thing. This is Haley speaking to you now, ladies, not me. Wives, be supportive of your husbands. Don't be nosy or gossip. Most of what he knows is not for you to know. Don't think too highly of yourself. Just be a godly example of a woman. Love your husband and love your kids. We had, years ago, a guy who became an elder in our church, and his wife said to me, what's the role of an elder's wife? I said, really? Okay. There is no office of elder's wife. There is no office to me of pastor's wife. There is this curiosity, and I understand the desire to help. But there's a fine line between helping and caring and being nosy and gossip. The biggest perk I think that Susan got out of being my wife at the church was a good seat on Good Friday and Easter and Christmas. That's about all. We went to the back of the line. It's like a staff lunch. We have a staff lunch. I'm always the last one to eat. By the time your husband gets home, he's talked to his coworkers and his boss and his staff about all these things. And I'm not sure that you need to know all that stuff, ladies. Being supportive doesn't mean that you have to understand all that's going on or even know. It used to drive Susan nuts. She would come home and she said, here's what I heard you guys are doing at the church. I'd say, yes. She goes, do you know how embarrassing it is for me to be in these meetings and everybody knows but me? And I said, I would think it would provide you an example to be a godly wife to say, my husband doesn't bring those things home to me. I would think that would be really beneficial to you. And she goes, you know what? That's how the discussions end up. Because they'll go, how do you not know? And she'll say, Tom doesn't bring that home to me. Why doesn't Tom bring that home? Because I can't fix it, and he's protecting me. So there's that, to me, that extraordinary opportunity there. Let me just add, and like I said, these are random, and we could spend a lot of time on it. But I just make a note under this, under criticism. Because what you do is so visible, criticism is abundant. So I have friends who will say, I never read an unsigned letter. I always read unsigned letters. They're the most interesting. Okay? They just are. Really? I did that? No kidding. I don't think physically I could accomplish that. But I'll try it if you want me to try it. don't think I could do that. Well, so what I do with criticism, I take it for a grain of, with a grain of salt. And by the way, I said this third time all night. All this stuff needs balance, right? So if I get a letter that's not signed or I get a criticism that's not fair, I try to look at it and go, okay, this person just wrote me a 5-page, single-space, handwritten letter. They obviously care. So I'm going to go through there, and maybe it's just 2 or 3 things in there that are legitimate. I may give it to another staff and say, will you take a look at this? By the way, here's what I learned this. Because I want to now respond. Okay, really? You want to start this? I wasn't looking for a pen pal, but if you want a pen pal, I'll be your pen pal. And so here's what I do. Okay, I will write the email. And then most often I'll go next door. Neil Pitchell is in the office next door. And I'll say, will you read this? And he'll read it. And I'll say, what do you think of that? He'll go, very good. Very good. Was your goal here to inflict pain and hardship? Yes. Very good. Very good. Well done. Well written. And I'll say, should I send it? And he'll go, no. Because you know that, right? The problem is it's person to person, but not face to face. And there's something about taking and then send. And then I kind of want to sit back and have a cigarette and relax and feel like I've accomplished something. So there's that balance. There's that balance because you're dealing with it. Here's what I hear too. This drives me crazy. I'll hear pastors, I love my job. It's a perfect job, except for what? The people. Okay, you moron, your job is the people. If you don't like people and the people are the problem, then be a monk, okay? I got it that it's sloppy. I got it that there's sheep. You've broken that down, done the research, you know, with all that sheep. Here's what I've learned, and I try to communicate it. I do it myself. Every day, you got to clean your palate from all the stuff of encountering the sheep, because if you don't, by the weekend, you're going to crave lamb chop, my friend. But you can't do it. And yet, I have to look. This is one of my favorite stories, because I grew my hair. I had my hair was kind of long, and I was ready to get it cut one day until somebody said, you got to get your hair cut. I said, really? You want to see long hair? I'll show you long hair. So I have a rebellious side. So I'm walking in one day. See, this is what you don't do. I'm walking in one day, and there's a guy I've never seen before standing there on the way into church. And he said to me, if I give you $20, will you cut your hair? I'll give you this in real time. So let's say he's this, although I don't think he had enough personality to be this. So I'm walking by. I know that's not fair. See this? I'm violating everything. I'm walking by. He says, if I give you $20, will you cut your hair? I look at him and go, if I give you $20, will you join a gym? So I know. Here's what I'm saying. Take the criticism and be quiet. Number 5. I'm not saying I do this. I'm not saying I do any of these. I'm just saying. Number 5, Haley's point number 5, we have 10 minutes. Husbands, your wives don't want you to preach a sermon to them. They just want you to listen to them and to what they have to say. So I just made a note that they don't need to hear the sermon that you preached on Sunday. They don't need to hear every issue, guys. And you line list them, you know. They don't need to talk on time management. And they want, you know this, they just want somebody to listen to them. And I will tell you this, if you'll do it. God's given you and a spouse what can be an extraordinarily constructive vehicle for criticism in your life. Susan used to say this. Here's what she would say. If I tell you something, will you promise not to get mad? Okay, now stop. That makes me so mad. That sentence there makes me so mad. I don't get mad. When have I ever gotten mad? When have I yelled at you? I don't yell. Really? Okay, slick. And then she would just pull away. Here's what I learned. It is obviously I was communicating something to her that I didn't intend to. But if your wife can speak to you without fear of reprisal, guys, she can be a wonderful vehicle to deliver criticism. Constructive criticism to you. 2 more things real quickly. Haley wrote this, be normal. Being a pastor's family doesn't make you godly. I thought that was really good. Loving Jesus makes you godly. Be like everybody else. Some of you need to get off your high horse. Did I say this was Haley? This isn't me. Get off your high horse, and some of you need to seek the power of the Holy Spirit to do the task God's given you. One of the things that was extraordinary, and I'd never been around church, just so you know, when East Valley Bible Church started, I'd never been around church. I'd been a believer for a relatively, I guess at that point had been a decade. I'd been around some churches, never in a position of leadership. I didn't know anything about church, and I didn't know any of the historic expectations. So one of the great things that we had is we were just like normal people. When Suzanne Maughan, Suzanne and Tim came and joined our staff, Suzanne said to Sarah, and it was just a great treat, she said, "You're the first pastor's wife I've met that's normal." I'm not totally sure I understand all that means, but we didn't try to fit into the expectations of what this was supposed to be. You're normal people. And I got the, you should feel conflicted at this point. You should be able to give me all sorts of contradictions. But to be just be normal, dress normal, be normal. Here was Haley's last point. My most frequently asked question was always, "Is Tom the same guy at home that he is on Sunday?" The question is really interesting. How you act out in the church matters. Character matters to be a good leader. One night we were doing a welcome. We did this newcomers dinner or lunch. And there's like about 100 people in this room. And Haley happened to be on campus. At the time, she was probably about 14. And we're going around the room. And I would have every person introduce themselves, tell themselves something about them, family, whatever. And Haley came in and sat down at the front on the end. And so we're going around the room. And it's over to Haley. She just happened to be on campus. So she came in. She knew I was in there. I think she was going to get a ride home with me. So I wasn't anticipating her participation. And she popped up. She said, "Hi, I'm Haley. Tom's my dad." And the question I'm asked most often is, "What's Tom really like?" And her aunt, I'll never forget the moment, because it was like one of the great validations to ministry. She goes, "He's the same guy at home that you see on Sunday." And that's one of the things that we all talk about, genuine, authentic, all those different things that go with it, but we don't pull it off very well. Primarily, I think, out of fear. This is always dangerous statements, and so I want to be careful. But most of the time, I have seen kids of pastors who have had a real problem with the whole role is because of either one of two things. Either the parents have communicated to them, "Here's what we're going without, so we can be in this," or when you really unpack it, "Mom and Dad are different at home than they are on Sunday." So like even when you preach, I just have this huge problem. I don't get, like I watch these guys that preach and they got the handheld mics and they're screaming and yelling. I don't get that. What's winsome? Who told you to talk loud? So I think in the front, this is just me, if I were teaching a preaching class, and it wouldn't be a very long class, you get a lot of credit, you wouldn't have to come much. I would just say, just be like you are, except maybe a little more animated because it's a bigger room. So here you go. I've got 5 minutes. Here you go. Here's what I've observed among pastors I've been with. I'm going to talk about senior guys. They're the most insecure group of people I've ever been around, which strikes me odd because they deliver sermons Sunday after Sunday after Sunday on the sufficiency of Christ. We sang with your grace is enough. There's a song we sing periodically. Jesus is all I need. We sing it, we teach it, but then when I watch, we don't live that way. Jesus is all you need. And that's the advantage, by the way, of hardship. Jesus is all you need, but I don't think you really know Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. I can say Jesus is all I need right now because right now everything's going okay. I'm driving with my friend. We're on the 60. We're at McClintock. This is probably 15 years ago. It's interesting how these things get ingrained in your mind. And he said to me, "Your life is so simple." And I just fired an answer. I hadn't even thought about it. And my answer was this: that's by design. Yeah, my life is simple. I mean, it really is. Like somebody the other day said, what are your hobbies? I don't know. Well, what are you going to do tonight? I don't know. It'll have food and TV in it somewhere. So here you go. I don't have kids at home. You do. But don't use that as an excuse to say you're too busy. I've been there. At one point, just so you get this, because I didn't, when we started, and still now, I don't take a salary from the church. So I made my money teaching Bible studies in the community. So I would teach six of them a week, two of them were in Tucson. So I'd get up on Wednesday morning and drive down there at 3:30. And then I would come home and prepare a different lesson for Sunday. And early on, and I had a full-time job. And still had time to go to games. You know, life is complicated. Well, whose fault is that? If you've got kids and they're in ballet and soccer and music and baseball and you're running around with your kids, let me tell you what, and I mean this with all due respect, that's stupid. Life is complicated. This is an old John Wayne quote. Life is complicated, even more so if you're stupid. Well, life is complicated, and you can make it even tougher. Use your head. Get control of that. Get control of that schedule. Why are you driven like that? And it's amazing, though we lecture against it, how much of us are driven by fear of men. We're teaching the book of Galatians right now, and there's that scene, you know it, in Galatians 2, where Paul comes to Antioch, Peter's been out eating with the Gentiles, and he responds, blah, 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 and he goes away. And it says, because of fear. But the other dude that's in there that everybody avoids is Barnabas. Barnabas is with Paul. He's the one that gives a testimony about all that Paul's doing. That's the power of the fear of men. And for you and me, here's got to be your flinch. You tell it to your people, I'll bet you all the time. This has to be our flinch. Whenever we feel that, why am I working this hard? Why am I caring about this? And then even in financial stuff. So I'm with a pastor, young pastor guy the other day. He's one of the young guys that have to get up like 45 minutes early to do their hair to make it look like they didn't have time to do it. And so he's one of those. So I'm watching him. He's got on these cool glasses. I said, those are cool glasses. And he said, yeah, they're really cool. I said, what would a glasses like that cost? He said, $350. I said, really? That's cool. And then he's going to complain about, you don't need to spend, here you go, you don't need to spend $350. You can go to Costco. They got cool glasses at Costco. Those are the things in your life. It's my last, and I'm done. It's the thing on contentment in the simple life. You've chosen a profession where you're probably not going to make a lot of money. Okay? And so in your life, it not only needs to be simple, you need to be content. You need to be satisfied with what God's given you. You as a couple need to say, we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that, not because we're sacrificing, but we're investing in the kingdom of God. I those are random thoughts that all need to be developed. That's really unfair because it's like drinking out of a fire hose, but that says 10:15. That's my drop dead time. Let's pray. Okay? That's my close. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the amazing opportunity you give us to serve you in a way that brings hopefully honor and glory to you. God, I pray that the couples here would be faithful servants and stewards to the ministry and the resources you've given them. God, use this day to encourage us. Help us understand that the work you've given us is really important, but we aren't. The challenges before us are huge. We can't pull it off, but you give us your spirit. God, fill us with your spirit. We ask in Christ's name, amen.